Well, the title of my sermon this morning is Speaking Truth to Power. And the subtitle is, I wonder what they're preaching about this Sunday at Camp David. How did I get there? I think you are all aware that George W. Bush is a man who wears his religiosity on his sleeve. He's a born-again Christian, likes to tell people about that fact. He has Bible studies and prayer meetings in the White House. He sprinkles his speeches with biblical verses. He addresses groups like the Southern Baptist Convention and the National Association of Religious Broadcasters. Anybody, it seems, except for the NAACP. He has the beliefs and the values and the spiritual practices of a typical evangelical Christian, except for one notable thing. And that is that he doesn't worship in a local congregation on Sunday morning. He doesn't make himself a part of a worshiping community. He doesn't submit to the discipline of hearing someone interpret the word over a long consistent period of time. And I'm not being cynical when I say I have a pastoral concern for him in that regard, because I think it's a very important part of our spiritual journeys, what we are all doing. Being a part of a local congregation, hearing the word read and proclaimed week after week, having our minds stretched and challenged with things that might be from a different perspective than we have. The point is not that the congregation should agree with the preacher, but the point is, by confronting ideas that are challenging and different, our minds grow, our imaginations are stretched. It's an important part of our spiritual practice. But my concern is that what George Bush does doesn't work out that way. He has church come to him. He has worship for himself and his family at Camp David or Crawford, Texas, wherever he's spending the weekend. And the service is planned and the word is read and preached by a military chaplain in a lot of cases. And my concern comes from the fact that I think there's a vast disparity of power there between a military chaplain and the commander-in-chief, and that it would be very difficult for a chaplain to be able to candidly interpret the Bible the way he or she understands it. So that's why I asked the question, I wonder what they're talking about at Camp David this Sunday. You know, the safe thing for a chaplain to preach on today would be the Mary and Martha story. Just preach on that story the way it has traditionally been read. You've just heard the story, and I think you know it. Jesus and his disciples have come into the town of Bethany, where Mary and Martha live, and they're invited into Martha's home. She goes into her cooking area to prepare something for them to eat and drink. She's hard at work, baking bread and cooking food and getting beverages together. It's a lot of work putting dinner on the table for more than 12 guests who have come in the door unexpectedly. But as she works, she notices that she's all alone in the kitchen, that her sister Mary is not there, and she starts to get angry. And so she goes out of the kitchen area, goes over to the living area of the home, and there's Mary seated amongst the disciples, listening to Jesus teach and tell stories, taking part in what must have been a wonderful experience. But she goes up to Jesus and she says, "Don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work? Tell her to get up and go in the kitchen and help me." And Jesus says, "Martha, Martha, you worry about so many things, but there's only one thing that's really important, and Mary has chosen that thing, and it won't be taken away from her." And I could see a military chaplain preaching that sermon with absolute impunity. He's not gonna have to worry about being in Fallujah the next week. You know, the only trouble is, I've preached sermons like that before, and every time I've preached it in line, people come up to me and say, I really enjoyed your sermon, but you know what? I agree with Martha. It would be the safest thing in the world for that military chaplain to tell this story, to say that spiritual values are more important than material values, that being fed spiritually is of more significance than being fed physically. And then maybe he could throw in an illustration about a man who had been pursuing material values in his life, and his life had run into a brick wall. His business had failed, and his marriage was in a fragile state. He was struggling with alcohol, and then he met Jesus, and he set his mind on spiritual values, and he turned his life around. And I can imagine the president saying, that sermon really spoke to me. But is that what George Bush needs to hear today? Do you suppose a military chaplain might dare to interpret this text from the standpoint of feminist hermeneutics? The idea of speaking truth to power. Martha was speaking truth to power. In her anger was a sense that the structure of her society that saw women as servants and men as the served was wrong, and she was angry about it. In a sense, Mary was speaking truth to power in asserting that her place was with everybody else. Do you think a chaplain would dare preach to the president today that whenever you find ancient social customs embedded in a text, that's not what is eternal about the text? That's not the message? But you know what I think would be a really risky thing to preach on from this text today at Camp David, or on the lectionary lessons today at Camp David? I think the really risky thing would be to preach on the Old Testament lesson from the book of Amos. You know who Amos was? Amos was perhaps the first of the great 8th century Hebrew prophets. Amos began his ministry around the year 760 BC. At that time, Israel and Judah were strong, independent, prosperous, wealthy, secure nations. The southern kingdom of Judah, the northern kingdom of Israel. And it was a time of great optimism among the people. They thought that times were good and better times were coming, and this optimism was shared by the religious establishment of the day. They said, we have this prosperity because God's blessing is on us, we are God's chosen people, and when the day of God someday dawns, it will be a day of even greater glory and celebration for us. But there was an undercurrent of disagreement in the religious community in Israel in the 8th century. And Amos and the other prophets expressed that different point of view. The whole point of Amos is basically, you may think you are prosperous, and you may think that God's favor is upon you, but that's an illusion. Because your prosperity is based on the rich exploiting the poor. And if economic injustice is at the heart of your land, God's blessing is not on you. And someday, when the day of God dawns, it won't be a day of joy and celebration, it will be a day of judgment. And in the text that we heard, Amos got very specific about the kinds of things he saw going on. He talked about, for instance, merchants, grain merchants, who liked to sell grain using ephahs that were too small and shekels that were too big, tilting dishonest scales and mixing grain refuse with the grain. Let me unpack that for you. If you wanted to buy some wheat and you went to the marketplace and found a grain merchant and asked for an ephah of wheat, an ephah was a standard measurement about equal to a half a bushel. So he wanted to buy an ephah of wheat to go home and cook with, make bread with. And so the merchant would take out the ephah measure and put it down on the ground and scoop out grain into that ephah measure until it was level across the top and then pour it into the customer's bag. But what if the measure was too small? What if it was 10% too small? The naked eye couldn't pick up the difference, but the merchant's profits would be increased by 10%. And then the way you would pay for this ephah of grain, you would pay for it with so many shekels of silver. A shekel was a measure of weight. And the way you would pay, the merchant took out a set of balance scales. And one of the things that Amos points out is that sometimes they would use dishonest scales. But you would take shekel weights. Say it costs 3 shekels to buy an ephah of grain. The merchant would take 3 shekels and put them on one side of the scale, so the scale would go down, and the customer would put silver on the other side of the scale until it was balanced. But if the shekels were a little bit too heavy, you would overpay for the merchandise. And then the last thing that Amos talks about is mixing in grain refuse with the grain. Now, the byproducts, the hulls, the dust, whatever, mixing it in, nobody would know it, but you're watering down the product. You're cheating customers 4 different ways. Do you think the president is hearing a sermon today on the book of Amos about the prophet's indignation of corruption and dishonesty in the marketplace and saying that this was a cancer on the land of Israel? Do you suppose that the chaplain preaching at Camp David today would dare make the connection between corruption in the 8th century BC and corruption in the 21st century AD? I think Amos would say that white-collar crime is every bit as devastating to the moral fabric of a nation, perhaps more devastating than violent crime. Because white-collar crime is done by the leaders of society, by the elite, by the wealthy. And if the leaders of the society are corrupt, that corruption permeates the whole society. We may believe we're strong, and we may believe we're prosperous, and we may believe the future is bright. But if this cancer is growing on our nation, I think we are deluded. And so, do you suppose a chaplain might dare say to the president that corruption is a real cancer on our society, whether you're talking about small-time corruption in the corner market or big-time corruption in the boardrooms of Fortune 500 corporations? Do you think a chaplain might say that perhaps it's the values of some of the people who are your biggest contributors that you really need to be concerned about and that you need to address when you speak to the nation? Speaking truth to power. It's a hard thing to do because power is intimidating, power is seductive, and it's easier to get along and go along. But if the Bible is an authoritative word, and if Amos is God's prophet, then this is a word that has to be spoken and a word that has to be heard. What do you suppose they're preaching on today at Camp David? Amen.